Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
Get a free audiobook of your choice at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're going to be talking about The Magnificent Seven.
With Denzel on a horse.
When is he not on a horse?
Of course, I don't know. We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe! Hi! Hello! How are you?
Abe, you're back!
I am back! I'm back from the wedding.
Good.
Yeah, I listened to the Snowden episode, and it was good. Great Matrix discussion.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back to other fun movie topics. This is episode 256, 2056.
Only? I mean, it feels like 556. Doesn't it?
Well, it's not. It's 256.
Yeah, it's only 256.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still a number of years in on this, though.
Yeah.
And this week we're talking The Magnificent Seven.
That's
right.
That's the remake of Magnificent Seven.
With The Magnificent Three.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boom!
Exactly. But, you know, actually, my lovely girlfriend suggested that anytime there's a movie that has a number in the title, we should have that number of guests in there.
That'd be a lot of guests.
Wow. Be a lot of guests.
Ocean's 13?
We should hope there's not an Ocean's 14.
There's going to be an Ocean's 8.
13 ghosts?
We got the Ocean's 8 coming.
Yeah. 13 ghosts? Yeah, like what Mark said?
Yeah. When they remake 13 Ghosts again, then we can worry about that then.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, they will.
Can't wait.
Speaking of which, by the way,
13 ghosts?
From Fast Film Reviews, he's known to be seen in various saloons cheating at poker. It's Mark Hoban.
Hi, everyone.
You're the one. You're the one cheating.
Yes.
How dare you?
Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. Glad to have you. Let's see. Before we get to the main show, let's do some show notes here, including a special happy birthday wish to Abe.
What? That's crazy. Happy birthday, Abe.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
I believe yesterday was the day, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. Yesterday, September 24th there.
Like, what, 57 now?
95, actually. 95.
95.
Yeah. This oxygen tank really helps me.
You have a very young-sounding voice for 95.
Yeah, I got it mechanically set to my 30-year-old voice from back in 2013, or 2016. I can't do math. That's how old I am. But yeah, no, the future is great, guys. You know, just wait, and you can time travel, and hopefully you don't have to kill yourself like in Looper.
How are the moon pies?
They're crazy. They're out of this world.
Right.
They actually, moon pies make me sick. I have bad memories of them when I was a kid.
Okay.
That's a true story.
All right. Other show notes here. First up, this is a little more, a couple show notes, actually. They're more locally oriented, but anybody that's in the Southern California area, the Newport Beach Film Festival is currently taking interns. So if anyone ever wanted to be an intern for a film festival, you know, get the insight on how these things work or whatnot, feel free to go to the Newport Film Festival website. And
what are some of the requirements there?
The requirements? Having a positive attitude, I assume.
Oh, that's good.
That's probably among other things. Wanting to be involved with film in some way, wanting to express your enjoyment of film in some way, possibly through a film festival where you can do various kinds of things.
Cool.
But yeah, you'd be working with my lovely girlfriend, who is currently in charge of the interns. So I think there's lots of benefits to being involved at the Newport Film Festival. So if you want to, you know, if there's anyone that's in the area, feel free to go for that.
You might get a chance to meet Aaron.
Yeah. let's see, what else? The Harvesters. This is a
Jimmy
film
O's.
That friend of the show, Jimmy O, is a producer on. That is having its October premiere in L.A. on October 18th. And it is a free premiere, actually. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you want to see the film that Jimmy O has been talking up many times on this podcast and just in general want to see a new horror film, a new original horror film, The Harvesters has its premiere the 18th of October.
Cool.
And speaking of, horror films and whatnot, it is coming to October, which means that we're going to have our horror bonus episodes, as we've been doing for the past couple years. So be sure to stay tuned for those, because that's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun, yeah. A lot of horror retrospective.
Yeah. Last thing, iTunes reviews and ratings. Good to get those. Helps out the show, helps other people find the show. If you want to log on to iTunes, search for Out Now with Aaron and Abe, you can send us a star rating and even type up a review if you want to.
Yes. Again, movie spoiler, mathematical formula of your choice. Anything is great.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. That was show notes stuff. Let's move on now. Let's get to know everybody. Each week we ask each other a question or two, try to set the tone for the podcast. We better get to
know everybody.
Know everybody.
That was good.
Spot on.
All right. Abe, why don't you start this off?
Sure. Have you guys ever ridden a horse?
Yes.
In my life?
Yeah. Well, not in a ring, like in those fairs, but actually, like, traversing the earth. Because I have not. I've only ridden in those little rings around in the fairs.
Well, I've done the rings for sure, but I've done a horse ride before, and I'm not a big equestrian guy in mm-hmm. general. I've done camels as well, and I'm not big on camels.
Oh, I've been on a camel before. But do ponies count? I've ridden a pony as a child.
Yeah.
Pony rides, yes.
Yeah.
Donkeys were a little more enjoyable.
I clearly have been lacking on my riding skills.
Elephants are a lot of fun. I've done elephants. That's fun.
All right, now you're just showing off.
Yeah, I'm rubbing it in.
Yeah, I've never ridden...
You've been on this earth longer than I have. It's your birthday and everything, and I've done
more
riding.
We're like 8 months apart. But, yeah, no, I definitely now need to ride an elephant for whatever reason.
I had the exact same question as Abe, so...
Did you really?
Yes.
That's because we look at each other's notes.
Yeah, we snuck peeks at each other's notes.
Yep, exactly. Stopped looking at my gym notes.
So, yeah, that's... That we both had the same idea in mind. So,
boom.
That's it.
You
that's
had
how
the
we do
same.
It.
Have you ever ridden a horse?
Yeah.
Wow. That's what are the odds?
I mean, yeah, right? We have been doing this together for like 5 years now.
We've overlapped before. It's been
yeah, we've overlapped. Yeah. You know, we seem to be on the same wavelength from time to time.
Yeah. Well, that concludes it then, guys. That's how you play.
Know everybody.
Know everybody.
I feel like I know you guys way better now.
All that horse knowledge.
Yeah, and elephant and camel
knowledge.
That was
the one piece of information that I didn't know about you guys, so I'm so glad to know that
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Let's now, you know, in he's... case there's like a Legend of Zorro type thing going on, I'll know who can ride a horse. I'll be like, Aaron or Mark, you guys take over. I'll just
what
stand in
the... What would the Legend of Zorro type thing be, exactly?
You know, if somebody gets taken... If you know, I don't know. Somebody's trying to rob a train, and we need to get horses. There you go.
Zorro is the first thing that came to mind when you thought of
that? I mean, he rides horses, right?
Yes.
Well, what's the first horse movie that you think of?
I don't know. Cowboys?
And aliens?
No. Never. All right.
All right. That's a lot
Let's
of
get
everybody.
Of, let's get down now, quickies.
Yep.
Each week, now we have a movie that we talk about. TM,
that was pretty good this week.
That was, yeah.
That was an A+.
Yeah, Abe, have you seen? It's been a minute since you've been on this podcast. Have you seen any other movies recently?
Let me wait another minute, and then I'll give you the answer.
Wait, really?
No, I'm just kidding. I've seen Don't Think Twice. That was something I really wanted to catch. While
you finally saw Don't Think Twice. Okay.
Yeah, and
you saw that recently?
Yeah. I just saw it this past weekend here. So it's still playing in a few select theaters, and I'm glad that it was. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's certainly, I really like a lot of the actors that are in it, actors and comedians that are in it. I listened to a lot of their podcasts, so I was happy to catch up with it. And yeah, it's kind of this breakup story of sorts of friends who go on to bigger and better things and also relationship breakups. And, you know, there's like a lot of comedy and drama mixed in with it together, and I thought that it was really well done by Mike Birbiglia, written and directed by. So if you still can, I would recommend it. If not, then don't worry. It's probably coming to VOD and or Blu-ray probably in the next month or in a half.
It's a nice window into sort of the backstage improv comedy, like the sort of goings-on with that. And
yeah.
Of course, he has a group of characters and stuff that he follows. And yeah, I thought it was a nice little drama.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, what have you seen recently?
Well, I saw Sully a couple weeks ago, and then of course the current movie, but nothing other than
what
that.
You think of Sully. We don't all keep up. What's going on here?
Yeah, well,
I know what you thought of Sully. I keep up, but what does everyone else need to know about it?
Right. Well, I wasn't sure if that was like too old or something to talk about, but
you can talk about.
I talked about A Few Good Men a few weeks ago.
Okay. Well, then Sully will definitely be quite recent. I liked it okay, but I wasn't crazy about it. I felt like it took a story that was pretty simple in its construction and really not much to it, and then try to create drama from sort of an odd angle. And instead of detailing the tragedy, well, it wasn't even a tragedy, but instead of detailing the problem, it was more the problem has already happened, and now he's going to be grilled as to whether or not he behaved properly. And I just felt like, well, we all know the story and that it ended happily, and Clint Eastwood sort of creates drama out of the inquisition that he gets, and it's – I don't know. I guess I just didn't – it was already a hit by the time I saw it, so I guess I had higher expectations of it, and I wasn't as captivated by it as I think the masses have been. But Tom Hanks is very good at creating characters that, you know, we want to champion. And this is another one of these sort of hero stories that Clint Eastwood has developed around this pilot. And I guess I wanted more drama. And I felt like the little drama that there was just wasn't enough that really interested me. So I wasn't as crazy about it as some have been.
All right.
It's good to know. By the way, Aaron, we were talking about Eastbound and Down a few weeks ago as well. Started watching season 4, and it's good. It's a good season.
Glad you're catching
up. Yeah, of course.
Seen a couple things this week, but first I'll highlight the hot other release of the week, Storks.
What?
The new WB animated feature film. My lovely girlfriend and I saw Storks, and it... I will first point out, it has a short film that begins the movie, which involves Jackie Chan, I like it. It's a Lego movie short type. Uh-huh. It's used with Legos, and I enjoyed that one. That was fun.
Okay.
The movie Storks, it's fine. Like, there's, I feel like I had a problem adjusting to, like, I don't know, kid-friendly mind, where I shouldn't pay too much attention to the concept of storks being accepted by humans as the delivery system for babies. Because that's what this movie is. There's, like, a world where storks were, like, the sole proprietor of babies until this changed, and then people just had babies, you know, presumably the regular, you know, real way.
Some kids are too young to know what that is right now, Aaron. They're like 4-year-olds listening to our show.
I understand that, but I feel like
I take
like
it they didn't go into depth as to how babies really
are. It's not gonna tell birds and bees stories. There are only birds in this movie, no bees. So like once it got away from kind of the basic plotting, I really enjoyed the kind of madcap humor going on. There's a lot of kind of Looney Tunes style madcap humor in it that I did enjoy. Like that, there's a particular set of characters voiced by Key and Peele who voice these wolves, and one thing I was surprised by what they do in this movie, and it consistently was funny. And there's little like Andy Samberg is the main voice in here, and like there's little jokes here or there that are like fun enough. Like the movie itself, it's fine. Like I wasn't like crazy about it. I don't need to see it again, but like it had enough to make me make me smile and laugh a few moments there and there.
Okay.
There's that one.
Glad to hear it.
I also saw this. I saw a Western that I had never heard of before, but I watched it being a guest on this film on another podcast that's going to come soon. I'll link it when it happens. The Forgotten Film Cast. It's a movie called There Was a Crooked Man. It's from 1970. It has Kirk Douglas and Henry Fonda. Mark, have you ever heard of this movie?
I haven't.
basically Kirk Douglas is a he's like an outlaw, and he robs he robs people of some money. He hides the money and gets caught, and so he goes to prison. And Henry Fonda plays like the new warden of the prison, and it's this mix of Kirk Douglas kind of befriending prisoners so he can plot an escape, and befriending the warden, who he gets along well with because it's Henry Fonda and Kirk Douglas. And it's got this kind of comedic, it's has a ton of like Butch Cassidy, but it also gets like really violent at the same time. So it was enjoyable. It was neat to find like a movie I've never heard of before and like it.
Directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz.
Yeah, it's a Mankiewicz. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty major film director.
Like All About Eve and Guys and Dolls, like a lot of like, you know, really like, you know, highly acclaimed. He won like multiple Oscars. So
Suddenly Last Summer, Cleopatra. Yeah.
So it's like this,
Letter,
you know,
to Three Wives.
A lot of, you know, really heavily, like, it's a movie like this that has a lot of like highly acclaimed people involved in it. And like, it just seems like it's dropped out of nowhere into like the history. So yeah, I found that one. It's like, all right, that's a good little movie that I, you know, discovered. So that was called There Was a Crooked Man.
Cool.
And yeah. All right. That was enough, please.
Tim?
Let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We talk one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when the movie's coming out, what we thought of it, what have you. And let's see. This week we're talking Passengers. This is the upcoming sci-fi film featuring Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. They play two passengers aboard a spacecraft who awaken like 90 years before they're supposed to arrive. And so they're just basically stuck on this ship together and develop a relationship. The film is directed by Morten Tildum, who previously made The Imitation Game. And yeah, with all that said, Mark Hoban, what do you think of the trailer for Passengers?
Well, I'm pretty excited about this movie. First of all, it stars like two of the biggest stars on the planet, Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt. And Morten Tildum has actually been kind of a favorite of mine. Of course,
you love Headhunters.
Yeah, and that's the reason. I mean, I liked Imitation Game fine, but Headhunters was actually a movie that came out in 2012. It was a much smaller film, but I really responded to it. So the fact that he's kind of becoming this big, I mean, he's obviously, this is a pretty major project, and The Imitation Game was pretty major too. I kind of get it why he's got fame, because Headhunters was something I thought quite special. So anyway, the story, I don't really know a whole lot about it. It looks like they're traveling on a ship, and it almost looks like, at least the beginning of the trailer, like they're going on a date, and it's almost like an advertisement for this little robot. Like, this is, you can invite girls on a date with this robot. That kind of thing. I mean, it's very glossy, actually. It seems very sort of, I mean, not that The Imitation Game wasn't a very well-filmed movie, but it seems like he's getting more and more sort of Hollywood, and this film feels that way. But I like the cast. It's also got Michael Sheen in a role, and also the trailer kind of reveals that he's not human. So that's sort of something that adds another level of like, well, what's going on here? I'm definitely interested in seeing this film, and I think the trailer did a pretty good job at making and at continuing me being interested.
Abe,
In the beginning of the trailer, I wasn't as into it, I would say, because like what Mark was saying, it's kind of just this kind of setup of this guy asking this girl on a date, and I was like, well, this is kind of boring. And then it gets a little bit more intriguing as the trailer goes along, and by the end of it, I was actually pretty on board. I think the things that interested me the most were why do they have to leave and go into this other planet? You know, they're in hypersleep for, I think, like 120-some-odd years, but they woke up 90 early or something like that, what Aaron said. And also, I feel like there's like some weird intrigue going on, because I'm seeing other faces, and Chris Pratt, maybe he's got a dark secret, but I'm pretty intrigued. And to quote Mark, you know, it's got two of the largest stars in movies today, and I'm down for that. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about what it's all about, and hopefully it's good.
Yeah, I'm excited for the film just because I've been waiting to see a trailer for this thing. Like, but just the initial setup of Pratt and Lawrence are on a spaceship together. They wake up early, and so they're all like, it's this, you know, it's like, you know, essentially Castaway of two people, that kind of thing, and they're in space. And if anything, I would say I was annoyed that the trailer gave me so much. Like, I didn't like seeing other cast members popping up besides Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen, it makes sense to show him because he's basically part of the ship. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I can, and then, you know, it gives you a neat visual to you know, put forth. But I feel like it gave me a lot of information that I didn't need to get for a movie that I was already, you know, sold on. Doesn't make me not want to see the movie more. Similar to like Arrival, Abe, for example, which I keep hearing nothing but great things about. By the way,
yeah, same here.
It goes to more and more film festivals. It's more of the kind of the anticipation based through trailers kind of diminishes a bit because I just know more than maybe I need to. But as far as, you know, seeing a movie featuring, you know, these people and this director, it's like, yeah, okay, like I'm down for that. And, you know, it's a big sci-fi movie that just is, you know, focused on a very limited cast. I like the idea of that. That's, you know, something different. I'm not necessarily expecting, like, I don't know, Moon. I'm expecting something solid to come out of this. So, yeah.
That's a good poll. That's an interesting thing. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective yet.
You know, we like referencing Moon on this podcast.
We do. So. Yeah, people should go see it.
Okay. Passengers arrives in theaters December 21st. So after you see Star Wars, you can see another space movie. All right. Let's move on now. Let's get to our main film review for The Magnificent Seven.
So you seek revenge?
I seek righteousness. But I'll take revenge.
I need more than a few to help us fight.
What a bunch of misfits we are.
You know how to shoot that thing? I'm good.
So am I.
Good luck, my friend.
Oh, we're good. We got a Mexican.
I sense we are bonding.
Oh.
We got seven.
He's got an army.
And they'll be murdered
by the world's greatest lover.
That should have been some of the trailer for The Magnificent Seven. Antoine Fuqua and Denzel Washington have reunited again and made a Training Day reunion with Ethan Hawke as well, with the remake of The Magnificent Seven, the remake of Seven Samurai. The film is a Western made with modern style, but we travel back to 1870 to watch Washington recruit a bunch of outlaws, including Chris Pratt, Vincent D'Onofrio, Ethan Hawke, Yong Hung Lee, Martin Sensmier, Manuel Garcia Rufo, all those names.
All of them.
To go after an evil man, Peter Sarsgaard, who has taken over a town of innocents, gunfights and banter ensue as the seven face off against a seemingly limitless army. Mark, are you a big fan of the original Magnificent Seven and this type of story in general? And what did you think of this new film?
I am a big fan of the original film. I would say it's, I mean, in terms of Westerns, it's probably, you know, ranks up there as one of my favorites. And I think a lot of what makes it so great is the chemistry of the cast. I mean, you've got Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, Robert Vaughn, James Coburn. And so when the remake was coming out, I always try to go in with, you know, open expectations. And I'm fine. I mean, obviously, the Magnificent Seven is a remake of Seven Samurai, which was also a classic. So I think you have to be fair and greet it with an open mind. And I did. And for the most part, I mean, I feel like it was a decent film. I don't think it was great, but I do think it could have gone a lot wrong. And it didn't. I think that director Antoine Fuqua did a lot of things right with the film. And so I think the fact that he's kept the setting in the same time period, and essentially the story is the same. It's this, you know, townspeople are being terrorized by a bad guy, and they appeal to this sort of, you know, imposing gunfighter. And then this gunfighter enlists the help of six other guys to help these people. And so that's good. I think the simple narrative is one of the strengths of the original film. And it just, it gives you a lot of opportunity then to extract the chemistry from the people. And, you know, you've got Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke, et cetera. And it is, I think, a charismatic cast. I have to compare it to the original, though, just because it is a remake. And I don't think it has as much chemistry as the original. But there's definitely enough humor and enjoyment. My favorite was Chris Pratt. I think that he's a star, and I think he delivers he gets a lot of funny one-liners. So he was probably my MVP. I think Denzel Washington does exactly what's expected of him. He's supposed to be sort of the leader, yep, of this this group, and he's good at that. And it is a racially diverse cast. I think that also helps the film, because it is a difference in this that somewhat sets this one apart. I think it's kind of not I don't think they make a big deal about it. I think it's just these happen to be a group of seven guys.
They go pretty far away to not make a big deal, because, like, Denzel Washington, he's, you know, no one ever questions the fact that he's a black guy leading a bunch of cowboys into town that's full of just, right, nothing but white people. Like, I'm very surprised that there were not N-words being hurled around in this movie.
Right, right. Well,
in 1870.
If Quentin Tarantino was directing the film, there would have been. But,
oh, yes.
But this is Anton Fuqua, so this is his sort of, you know, take on it. And I thought that Anton Fuqua, I think, like, I wasn't a big fan of The Equalizer, which is the last film that he did, which also starred Denzel Washington. So because that wasn't I didn't care for that film, I kind of thought, oh gosh, this is going to be sort of a not so good. And it actually was better than I expected. I still don't think it was a great film, but I do think it was enjoyable fun. And I think if you're looking for something, you know, enjoyable to go to the movies, you know, on a Saturday matinee, I think this would be a good choice.
Abe?
Yeah, there's nothing remarkable about the movie, and the plot's pretty simple. It's pretty linear. There's no subplots. The characters aren't very deep. The bad guy isn't very compelling. Again, the story is what the story is.
If Peter Sarsgaard had, like, a giant brain and was screaming constantly, like Green Lantern.
See, if he was coughing up so much phlegm like that and turning yellow, I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is like the scariest bad guy ever. But really, the cast is what really keeps me engaged in the movie, and it really keeps the movie going. So, I mean, if they had, I'm pretty sure they gave it a lot of thought. You know, the casting director gave that a lot of thought too. But yeah, that's really what makes this movie so engaging is the cast and how they are portraying these characters on the screen. Again, nothing is very overly complex, and it doesn't really. There are no real risks, per se, in terms of, like, oh, wow, well, they're going to address this or address that. It's just more of, no, well, you know, there is some justice that needs to be handling, and we have a team here assembled to handle it, and so let's go ahead and get this thing done. We're a ragtag bunch of misfits, and together we'll try and do some good in our lives, and if we survive, then great, and if we don't, then we chose where we died, which is a line that Denzel says to Ethan Hawke in the movie. I certainly think that Vincent D'Onofrio is giving a pretty good performance. I loved his crazy man, his crazy man persona, but also just the voice that he put on for this Westerner who kind of is a loner, who just wants to be left alone. But, you know,
he's fat Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah, and
yeah. I was gonna say a lot of Vincent D'Onofrio's performance, I think, is visual. Well, in fact, you might say that about a lot of the performers, but I think a lot of his, you know, humor is the way he looks. And mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Pratt gets a really funny line about, I think that bear is wearing people clothes.
Yeah.
Which, so, like, you know,
yeah, you don't want to be messing with Vincent D'Onofrio at this point in time. You know, he's a large dude, but also he's the kingpin. So you definitely don't want to be messing with him. All in all, again, not a very remarkable movie, nothing crazy about it, but I really enjoyed it for the cast, and I definitely want to see where they were going to take this, even though I knew kind of what the outcome might be or is going to be.
For my money, Ethan Hawke was the MVP, if we're talking MVPs here. Between the three of us, we seem to have Pratt, D'Onofrio, and Hawke set apart.
I don't know if I have an MVP, per se. I just want to give a shout-out to VD.
Well, you gave a shout-out to D'Onofrio. I mean, I did hear you give a shout-out to Byung-Hun Lee. Like,
he was good as a quiet
Asian. None of them
are
particularly bad, yeah. But I think Hawk was the one that seemed to have like an arc to me as far as like he has he has PTSD from the Civil War, which is like, okay, that actually makes him somewhat interesting in my eyes, because there's not much interest with between any of these characters. It's you know, it's kind of fun to see what D'Onofrio's doing, because it's like, all right, I guess I got to be the one that hams it up. So that's what he does in this movie. And Pratt's just coasting on charm. And, you know, Washington's, he's underplaying everything. So it's like, I'm left with, okay, I got, you know, the, I got Vasquez and Red Harvest, who are like, all right, these are the other two guys that we're signing on to this thing. I got, and I got Billy Rocks, who he plays with knives. That's fun. So Hawk, it's like, he's trying to do something, it seems like. And he also has a lot of good one-liners, just like Pratt. So it's like, between having, you know, some dramatic arc in this movie and, you know, saying things that made me laugh, it's like, all right, Hawk wins it. The movie overall, I agree with you guys. It's, there seems to be a lack of effort to do anything more than just make an action movie. Not even much like a Western. The movie just happens to be set in the West, but I feel like it's just like it feels like a 90s action movie. There's a good amount of shooting, especially towards the end. There's
a lot of shooting. We should talk about that.
We should, because part of what held me back from liking it more is that while there's a lot of action, it's not amazing action. Not that I need like amazing action, although that's, you know, preferred, but like, it seems like it really showed me the limits that Fuqua has as an action director. Like, because there's just little things that bug me as far as like how it could have been cut differently. Where, yeah, like there's like one moment where D'Onofrio chases a guy into like a building, and you know there's a window next to the door, and so presumably you think, all right, the guy's gonna come flying through this window all in one shot. Like, that's funny. It's funny, and it's like, it's, you know, it's a neat action beat and whatever. And instead, it cuts away. It, like, cuts away to a different angle of that same window. So it's like there's just little things like that where it's like, all right, there could have been a way to do this in more of a clever way that I've seen before in many other action movies, and we're just kind of not quite getting there. We're not hitting all the beats in a seamless way. And so it's a mix of like, all right, there's decent action throughout this thing, which is nice. Their cast is having fun, regardless of how deep their characters are. They're having fun. And there's nothing really the movie wants to say about anything. Not that movies need to say something about something all the time, but I've seen plenty of, you know, Westerns, let alone modern Westerns, that have deeper meanings behind them or whatnot. And this one is just like, all right, we're just making a straight up action movie. And if that's what all it wants to do, okay, it's fine, but it's nothing all that special.
Yeah, Texas Rangers was super deep.
Texas Rangers with the beak?
James Vanderbeek. But yeah, I agree with you that there was nothing. While I thought that the technical aspects, I thought that the cinematography was competent, and I thought the direction was competent. Yeah, there was nothing that was like, wow, that's a different take on an action sequence, or that's a different take on how I would usually see a shootout in a, you know, in a one street town. So yeah, unfortunately, there wasn't anything like that. But Mark, did you want to chat about the shooting?
Well, it just, to me, it feels like it was a rated R movie, and then they took out all the blood, they cut away from every scene, and so then it just felt kind of odd. Like, and there was a lot of shooting, like a lot of people getting blown up.
Yeah, there's. I will not be surprised if there's like an extended director's cut version of this movie. You know, the remake of the very PG-rated Magnificent Seven, getting like an R-rated cut.
My point isn't that I expected to see blood, or
I know what you're saying,
but maybe less people being shot. I mean, if you're gonna shoot people, then let's like dramatize it. But there's so much of it, and then the editing was odd to me, and there was parts where I'm like, how is this PG-13? It does not feel PG-13.
There's no blood.
No blood, which is strange, because you open up on a scene in which a lot of people die, and there's like this woman who runs away. She gets an axe in her back, and I was like, "What? This is PG-13, but something like The Conjuring is rated R."
The beginning right away sets like a, you know, you have to set up that Peter Sarsgaard, he's bad.
He's a bad guy. Right.
He kills like a bunch of innocent people. There's an axe being thrown on a woman's back, and he burns a church down. Yeah. So it's like, okay, this is clearly this guy's not good.
And then cut to titles.
He does everything but kick a dog. Is like,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Or like, you know, throw dirt on a baby, which he comes close to doing.
I want to comment a little bit about the villain in this too. I do think that Peter Sarsgaard is a weak villain. Mm-hmm. Okay, so say what you will about Eli Wallach as the lead Mexican in the original, which is an over-the-top performance. But at least he was
memorable. Eli Wallach going over the top? Wait a minute. That sounds crazy to me.
I mean, it was memorable. This Peter Sarsgaard, I thought, was very dull. I mean, and a greedy land baron. It's like, snooze. That's just so, like, I mean, I get it. They're trying to, like, let's update this for, you know, 2016. But I didn't think that was an interesting update. And if
as audiences all know, when you have to update something for 2016, greedy land barons is what the kids want to see.
I mean, that's exactly what we want to see. But, you know, I got
to That's why that Lex Luthor plotting is timeless. Anytime Lex Luthor's around, he definitely needs to have land.
He could still be a greedy land baron, but then give him more, like, chew the scenery and stuff. He doesn't do any of that.
Yeah, he doesn't really do any of that stuff. I mean, Nick Polizzolotto, I can't pronounce his name, the guy who wrote
True Detective and Richard Wank,
you know, they co-wrote the screenplay together, but they brought up some interesting elements for Peter Skarsgård characters. You know, he's like, hey, you know, Rockefeller didn't have to do this himself, yada yada, you know, I'm gonna try and be like those guys. And then he turns into like a giant pussy at the end of the movie, where it's like a quick gunfight with Denzel is just like, oh please don't kill me, man. And it's like,
I wish you guys had made him more menacing
so that I could feel as though, wow, while he might be like a slight guy, you know, he's like a buck 50, he's like 150 pounds and, you know, 5'8", but at least if he was like, no, I'm like an iron-fisted guy, I'm going to kill everybody in my way, regardless of what, and I'm also like the quickest draw in the West or in Sacramento, then sure, that'd be a better climax of action. But no, he just turns in the way that they wrote it. Like, I agree with Mark. It's just, you start off kind of interesting, and then there's just nothing else.
Well, it makes me wonder if there's more that we didn't see, because Denzel's character, Sam Chisholm, Faraday, Goodnight Robichaux, and Bartholomew Bogue. That's a lot of creative naming right there.
Goodnight Robichaux is a dope ass name.
Goodnight Robichaux are pretty good. I mean, that's good.
So is Billy Rocks, by the way. Billy Rocks for an Asian guy?
Billy Rocks, yeah. Really gets across the message. Billy Rocks. But, like, there's clearly a history between Washington and Sarsgaard's character that's heavily implied, and you get, like, some kind of answers for why that is towards the end of the movie. I wonder if the movie would have benefited from, I don't know, seeing some kind of flashback or something to really kind of give you an understanding of Peter Sarsgaard more, just because he really only has the first 10 minutes of the movie to, you know, shine as far as presenting himself as a threat before we just don't really see him much at all until, you know, the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of unfortunate. And, you know, one thing is I also liked about the movie is they didn't overly sexualize Haley Bennett's character. I was like, well, that's good. You know, I know that it could have easily been a way for Nick and Richard to do that, but I'm glad that they kept it to the point of, hey, like, this is a town in distress, this is a woman who's lost her husband, and they're really just plotting to try for this army that's going to attack them. So I'm glad they did that.
Yeah, she just wants to be involved in the shooting. She's not about Chris Pratt, Chris Pratt, by the way, it seems like they cut a lot of things involving him out, because there was some weird editing going on with, like, things he seemed to be involved in but didn't make much sense.
I mean, at one point he's, like, helping them with the dynamite, and then on the next second he's, like, drinking in the saloon?
There's stuff like that. There's just little lines he says where it's like, this seems like it could have made more sense if I had, like, a couple other mentions of this line previously. Just, like, little things.
I agree. I also felt as though there was there's another Native American character that's on the side of Peter Sarsgaard, and that guy seemed like a boss, and then that guy, was kind of, I mean, while it was kind of cheesy, like Native American on Native American fight, I was like, this is kind of cool, but it ended very quickly, and I'm kind of bummed out, because that sort of is how a lot of these one-on-one fights seem to end, because they're, you know, they wrote it as a collaborative fight. You know, that's the longer piece,
It's a little too matter-of-fact, where it's like, by the time you get to certain, you know, certain scuffles that you're expecting, they don't really go anywhere. Like, you know, like, Sarsgaard has, like, a key, you know, henchman guy next to him, and he kind of just...
Cam Gigande?
Yeah, Cam Gigande's Cam Gigande.
Never back down's Cam Gigande?
That's right. And you know, there's no real payoff for a lot of those things.
So yeah, I agree. Which is kind of unfortunate, because while you do have these
like their biggest adversary is a mechanical machine gun.
It's to me, it seemed like the machine gun was so far away, but yet it seemed to, like, just caused so much damage. That was very powerful. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seemed to be very far away.
And didn't it feel like they killed a lot of the bad guys, but then when the machine gun stopped and they had to reload, like a lot of those bad guys were still alive?
Well, that's part of my problem with the action direction. There's not a... The geography is kind of all over the place, and there isn't, like, I understand the stakes as far as we have seven guys versus, like, an army, but there needs to be some point where you kind of really get the nature of what this, how big this army is, if it's kind of indescribable, then that doesn't really help me quite understand the stakes, necessarily.
I definitely want to echo your point about the geography. I would think that it'd be simple enough for me to understand the town's geography, but I feel like there were nooks and crannies that showed up in the movie that I didn't realize we're there. And
well, because the town has one main street and then like maybe three streets at most cross it. So right. It's like I don't feel like I should be too confused by where everyone is.
And yet I am. So
yeah,
that's a kind of a bummer. I mean, I don't know if that's an oversight or if it's just hey, let's we've got a really good solid script here about Denzel and his six other guys. We don't need to worry about that stuff. So perhaps, but
I mean the movie's. Like, it really coasts on just being fun. Like, that's really what it tries to go for. And if that's all it wants to do, that's all it wants to do. But it's like, all right, like, I see where other options could have happened to kind of make this either more complex or to dial down certain things to play up, you know, maybe some of these character beats.
I mean,
more.
They definitely needed a train sequence like Lone Ranger.
Yeah. like, and I know, Mark, like, you're comparing, you're not riding on what the original does versus it or what the first Magnificent Seven does versus this one, but I see what you're saying as far you know that cast is more charismatic. I think both of these movies have somewhat of the same problem where everyone seems way too nice to be an outlaw.
they seem to sort of all have that heart of gold, and it's like, what? Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish that you guys would just be grimiest guy is Vasquez, played by...
he never even seems grimy. He just seems like he has a 5 o'clock shadow, so you're just supposed to assume
well,
that
he's...
He's
the one that is apparently the outlaw that is recruited by Denzel Washington's character. And
he's the only one that's wanted.
Right, yeah. And it's like, you know, even that guy has a heart of gold because he's like, oh, my buddy Chris Pratt been shot. I gotta go.
Well, like Chris Pratt, like, should be, like, a bad guy. Like, he should be, like he should... Like, Steve McQueen... Who Chris Pratt? Like none of these. What I do like that the movie doesn't necessarily try to recreate any of those characters. Mm-hmm. It just basically goes its own way. But right. Chris Pratt's he's probably closest as far as like making him like the Steve McQueen type character. And Steve McQueen, he seems a little darker in that movie than this movie. He might he's still Steve McQueen. You can't really necessarily buy him too much. Villain.
I mean even in the original one, they're still basically good guys at heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not to keep. I mean. I'll keep comparing it a bit, but there are some arcs in that first one compared to this one. Like such as like Charles Bronson has some really good material to work with, which generally surprised me because I don't think Charles Bronson's a very good actor. But he has
he doesn't talk a lot in those Death Wish movies.
Well, when he does, it sounds I'm gonna get you back. Like it's just really it's really nasally. So and he's also I'm the ugliest action star ever. Like that's kind of his thing. So it's,
you probably really
like,
be like, able to kill
like,
me,
James, like James Coburn has like some fun stuff going on in that. Like in this one, it's like all right, there's a lot of like them posing to look very cool during their shootouts more so than deep characterization.
Are you talking about
in the
remake?
Fun.
Yeah, still fun. Yeah, I agree. So again, I nothing's very deep about the movie. It's just I felt as though the cast was really. By the way, I just gotta say that Matt Bomer, really good looking guy, really good looking guy.
For 1870,
and surprising that he. Well, I mean, I don't. Is it? I mean, is it a spoiler to say what happens to him?
No,
it was a surprise.
No,
like, oh,
it's in the trailer.
He's not in the rest of the movie.
He's not one of the Magnificent Seven.
Right, like he seems like he could have been like. You mean he's big enough star that he could have been, but I guess.
I mean, it sets up like a different character who I can't even recall the name of at this point. You know, like Haley Bennett's like her for like friend. Who's like, oh yeah,
his name is Teddy.
Teddy or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's what these Seven Samurai and Magnificent Seven the original like they. You know, in addition to like the six guys that are all kind of experienced at this, there's always like the one that's kind of like a rookie and all this. And I guess it's supposed to be Red Harvest, the Native American character, but there's not
that
much
guy
there
like the,
really
the beast of the group.
Yeah, he is. He's a great archer.
Yeah.
He always has the best pose when it comes to shooting off arrows.
Yeah,
but there's not much done to really make him be like, we don't want you, but you should come along with us anyway, kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
they needed an Emilio Estevez for the Young Guns, is what you're saying.
Like, everyone's just pretty much, like, friends right away. The most effort it takes to get someone to join is Vincent D'Onofrio, who just kind of shows up.
He shows
like,
up.
I'm here. Yeah.
He's been tracking them because he has no friends. So he just shows up one morning, and he's like, by the way, guys, there's somebody over there. And they're like, oh, hey, it's that guy who killed two people in front of us.
Well, and just one other thing I'll add. I do feel like the movie was a little bit too long. I don't – since there isn't much here, it's a very simple story. I didn't think we needed such a protracted buildup to the final confrontation.
Yeah,
I would say I
definitely felt that low in the middle, Mark. I agree with you.
See, I didn't actually feel too much of a pacing issue. Like, I can see it being shorter. That wouldn't hurt the movie at all. But I was pretty involved with the whole thing. Probably because I just really dislike The Equalizer so much because of how long that movie
if they were ever going to quote me, I'd say better than The Equalizer.
Yeah, it's a refreshing change for Fuqua and Washington to make a movie that, you know, feels fine the way it is for me, as opposed to The Equalizer. Like, why is this 10 hours when it could be 90? And it's like
90 hours instead of 10?
90 minutes.
So
it's like, you know, it had that going for it. But yeah, so any other thoughts about The Magnificent Seven?
I think Chris Pratt really needs to do more card tricks in his movies.
Yeah.
Those are actually kind of neat.
He made it work, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Did his job. All right, well, why don't you people go and see The Magnificent Seven?
I'd say you could do a dollar theater for this. I enjoyed the cast on the screen, but you don't have to rush out and see it right away.
Yeah, I would say the same, dollar theater.
Yeah, I say dollar theater as well. If it had more, like, Western shit, that's why I keep saying, you know, it's more like a 90s action movie, because it doesn't really feel like a Western. Like, there's not much,
even a Western is basically an action movie, even...
You see plenty of Westerns. I mean, there's a design to how the pacing pays off and how the close-ups and whatnot work that just doesn't seem to be, like, here. Like, it doesn't...
You know,
it doesn't...
there was a visual grandeur to this film. I will say, like, I thought there were some close-ups and things in the way that Anton Fuqua framed his shots and stuff that were good. I mean, there's definitely... There's talent behind the camera, and I think there was some... That helps in a Western. I mean, you want to have vistas and you want to have like wide angle shots and then close ups and maybe a combination. And I think he did that.
I felt I could use more. And
yeah, I felt like you could probably use a little bit more as well.
It felt too glossy to me. It felt like it was for one thing there's a lot of practical sets and whatnot. There's some CG in here where I was like, okay, like I get it. Like. A lot of some shots of a lot of horses all in one riding around the plains that just kind of looked too nice, too neat. Or there wasn't a grit. There was a grit missing, I guess. True grit.
A true grit. If you're looking for like bad teeth, yeah, go see True Grit. And then if you're looking for like crazy, like more authentic stuff, I definitely recommend what was Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight.
The Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
Or Django.
Or Django. I mean, I wasn't huge on that one, but yeah. In any case, yeah. Wait, where did you tell people where they should go see it, Aaron?
I said dollar. I agree with
okay.
dollar.
Dollar. Okay.
I'd say if it was because I know it's like an IMAX screens this week. It's like I don't
is it
know
really?
Huh. It is. Yes. It's like I don't know if there's enough here for me, but like, oh yeah, see it in IMAX. But all right. That's the Magnificent Seven. Let's move on now. Let's get to our sponsor real quick. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and other similar programs for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Choose a book to download for free and start listening. It's just that easy. audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You can get a book for free. You can check out the service. You don't like the service, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book they download for free. So be a winner.
And read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Hmm. All right, let's move on now. Let's get to our feedback.
Feedback, feedback, feedback.
This is where we go over the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we read the various responses the listeners had to our questions we proposed here. And you also gave us some questions that we will answer later on.
First question we asked everybody, what actors have done the best playing opposite Denzel Washington? Philip Emmonish, right? Ethan Hawke. And I'd just add in there Ray Allen.
Oh, Ray, that's a good one.
Yeah, from Jesus Shuttlesworth.
Yeah, from He Got Game.
He Got Game.
Let's see. I mean, Tom Hanks feels like an obvious answer.
Philadelphia? Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like American Gangster, so I would say Russell Crowe.
But does he really play off him in that movie?
Well, I'm just saying a person who played co-starred with Denzel Washington.
I guess I mean more of like, you know, chemistry with Washington, I guess. Like Ethan Hawke and Washington, they're in the movie the whole time in Training Day. Like, that's them. I guess that, because I like American Gangster, too. I agree.
It's a good song.
That movie. It's a good song.
With Jay-Z?
Yeah. All right, next question. What are your favorite modern westerns, as in post-2000? Manish writes True Grit. Adam writes True Grit. Greg writes 310 to Yuma. Philip writes Bone Tomahawk. And Anna writes Slow West.
By the way, Bone Tomahawk, you recommend that, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's good. I some others think it's a lot better than just good. I think it's good. I think it's a little long for me, but I think there's a lot of really good stuff in there. Kurt Russell's great. What's his name?
That one actor.
Oh my god, blank.
Patrick Wilson.
Not Patrick Wilson. He's good. He's good too. The whole cast of Matthew Fox is good too. Richard,
the guy, the tall guy with the glasses.
Yes,
Richard Jenkins.
There we go.
Yeah, I love that guy. Jenkins. He's a great actor.
He's great in that movie.
Yeah, he's a great character actor.
Yeah. I love 310 to Yuma. I think it's a fantastic remake for one thing.
That would be my pick.
Yeah, in terms of your bad guy with a heart of gold, that one's a good one, because I would never have thought like, oh, Russell Crowe is this giant asshole, and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, there's a turn on a dime of Christian Bale's character, and it's like, oh shit, this is 310
to Yuma. It's really also I did rewatch the original 310 to Yuma pretty recently as well. It's that movie's fantastic. Also, Glenn Ford and Lee Van Heflin. It is a great movie. They're both great. And speaking of movies that aren't about much, this movie has, those movies have just a lot of psychological drama that really adds into what's already good about just seeing a really good western with great stars in it. So
true that. All right.
So I was going to add, Ben Foster is in 310 to Yuma, and I don't know if this is stretching things a little bit, but I thought Hell or High Water this year has western elements to it, and he's also in that, and I thought that was quite good.
That's on my catch-up list.
310 to Yuma is still, I like that more, but I think since this just came out, I just wanted to highlight that.
Oh yeah, like if I want to talk about, modern day westerns, Hell or High Water, No Country for Old Men, obviously, comes into there.
Yeah.
And Abe and I like mentioned this too. The Way of the Gun also.
Yeah.
One of my favorites. So.
That's a brutal jumping into a fountain full of broken bottles scene. Yeah. Any case, next question we ask everybody: what actors do you like to see riding a horse? Greg writes Bruce Campbell, Hail to the King. April has there was certainly a comedy in seeing Liam Neeson in A Million Ways to Die in the West, mostly because he's as big as the poor horse, I guess. Philip has Liv Tyler in Fellowship of the Ring. Rob has Viggo Mortensen. Lastly, Scott has everyone in Bite the Bullet. I'd add in Billy Crystal.
Yeah. Just the cast of City Slickers. We'll go with that.
The entire cast. Daniel Bruno Stern. Kirby,
Daniel Stern.
Daniel Stern hates that horse.
All right. Next one. Vincent D'Onofrio has provided many great performances throughout his years. Favorite Vincent D'Onofrio role? April writes, he's always great, but his best has to be Fisk in Daredevil. Philip writes, Pyle in Full Metal Jacket. Brad writes, I'm going to go way back to his one question mark bearded performance. He hasn't seen this movie yet, apparently. In The Blood of Heroes, where he starred alongside Rutger Hauer. For those who don't know, it's the kind of Mad Max takes on a sports movie. Definitely worth checking out. Hmm. All right. And Greg writes, got to go with the Kingpin, Wilson Fisk.
He's great as Earl in Men in Black.
Yeah.
How about the original Thor in Adventures in Babysitting?
There you go.
The original Thor.
You may have to Google that or rewatch it, because you may not know what I'm talking about. But
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And he is unrecognizable in that movie. You'll see him. He's like, that's Vincent D'Onofrio.
There's a movie called The Salton Sea with Val Kilmer.
Yeah, with Val Kilmer.
I'm a huge fan of, and he plays a character named Pooh Bear. Because he plays a notorious meth dealer who like sniffed so much like cocaine and did so much meth that his nose like rotted off, so he wears a prosthetic nose on his face, and it is quite the performance. he does a lot of crazy things in there, but that's one I don't know.
I have another uncharacteristic choice, but he was quite frightening in The Cell.
Yes.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
yes.
That's the one with J-Lo, right?
Yeah, her and Vince Vaughn.
She plays a brilliant psychologist. Stretching all of her acting muscles.
And Vince Vaughn plays a fast
and Vince Vaughn,
detective. Yeah.
in very serious mode.
Vince Vaughn in serious mode, I actually enjoy, but True Detective 2 wasn't great.
Serious mode comes, there's a lot of ups and downs of Vince Vaughn serious mode. The ups are quite strong, but the downs are pretty down.
Right. So. All right, next question we ask everybody, what is your favorite villain from a Western? Manish has Calvin Candy and Steven are a horrific duo in Django. Greg writes Kenneth Branagh in Wild Wild West.
Oh, come on.
Scott has Henry Fonda in Once Upon a Time in the West. Steven writes Gene Hackman in Unforgiven. That's a pretty good one. Philip has Yul Brynner in Westworld. And lastly, Joe Jans has Harvey Korman in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, is Hadley Lamarr?
Perhaps.
No one? Hedley. You got to say Head.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman's a good choice.
That's a good choice.
If I go back, I can go like Lee Van Cleef in Good, Bad, and the Ugly. It's pretty bad in that movie.
Yeah,
good
one. I just watched The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and Lee Marvin is a pretty big asshole in that movie.
Marvin?
This isn't my favorite villain, but Brian Dennehy in Silverado was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ned Beatty in Rango?
Yes.
I mean, he's a pretty bad guy.
Him and Bill Nighy. As Rattlesnake Jake.
Rattlesnake Jake.
Another great Western name, by the way, Rattlesnake Jake.
What is your, both of your impression of Eli Wallach in the original Magnificent Seven?
I don't recall.
he's like over the top Eli Wallach. It's not as good as, The Ugly in Good, the Bad, the Ugly, but he's there and he's shouting and he's being evil. Like, it's not my favorite Eli Wallach performance, but it's, he's a good threat compared to Peter Sarsgaard. I enjoy watching his presence more in that movie than watching Sarsgaard pick up a napkin and wipe his lip every now and then when he starts shouting. Let's see. Last question we asked here. Favorite film about a ragtag group of people brought together to fight evil? Greg writes, I don't want to say Star Wars, but Star Wars. Philip writes, Fellowship of the Ring. And Joe writes, Ghostbusters.
Hmm. I love this town.
Yeah. Any ragtag groups of people you like seeing brought together to fight?
Suicide Squad. I'm just kidding. I mean, the cast is aight, but the movie was terrible.
I'll mention another movie that also follows a similar story to, The Seven Samurai and, all these other movies. Mm-hmm. 13 Assassins.
I thought you were going to say A Bug's Life.
I could have, but 13 Assassins is a little better. From Takeshi Miike, the Japanese film that's basically like an update of Seven Samurai. And that movie it's terrific for one thing, but the final act in that movie, that's how you do just amazing action for like 40 minutes straight. Just seven guys going against an army of people.
Yeah.
Oh, what about the Goonies?
Yeah, that's a ragtag group of people fighting,
Why not?
Yeah.
Few sentences have ever began with 13 Assassins and ended with the Goonies.
Hey, how about the Goonies? Yeah. Now we're moving to questions for the panel here. So Aaron and Mark, please feel free to answer this question that we have from Philip. Have you seen D'Onofrio in The Whole Wide World? And if so, what did you think of the movie, the film?
I don't know this movie.
It's
what is The Whole Wide
from 1996.
World? D'Onofrio, Zellweger.
Directed by Dan Ireland. I've never seen it either, but I can't tell if Philip is on the fence about it or if he loves it. But
in Texas in the 1930s, a young school teacher, novel in price, meets a handsome, eccentric, interesting young man named Robert Howard. He's a successful writer of the pulp stories of Conan Barbarian. She's an aspiring one.
D'Onofrio produced it.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it, and so I can't give an informed opinion, Philip.
He plays the guy that wrote the Conan stories? Okay. interesting.
No, also looks interesting.
I've not seen this movie.
It's got 7.3 on IMDb, so I'm gonna say that it's decent.
7.3, that's pretty good for IMDb.
Good.
All right, well,
so, sorry, Philip.
The word is out on that one.
Yeah, we'll get back to you.
All right, next question. Wade writes, which actors would play Clinton and Trump when an inevitable movie about this election season comes out?
It's gonna be made by HBO, obviously.
Well, I think they're making one. I think the guys that did Game Change and Recount,
yeah,
they're making a Trump.
Are they?
Movie.
Are they really?
I believe they're getting stuff. What's his name? The guy that did.
I got it. All right. Yeah.
Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton.
That's
and
what
Daryl
I was thinking.
Hammond as Trump.
And Daryl.
Boom. I was also thinking Kate McKinnon. Go. I was trying to think of a funny dude.
I mean, and how could it not be anything but a comedy, right? So
yeah. It'd be like a silly romp of two friends going on an adventure.
Oh, yeah, a very lighthearted romp,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, narrated by Christopher Walken.
Jay Roach is who did the recount in Game Changers.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to think of. And did Trumbo last year.
Academy Award-nominated Trumbo.
And the Austin Powers movies and the Meet the Parents movies.
All the Austin Powers movies?
Yes.
Oh. Boom, there you go. I would agree with Mark's answer. Aaron, do you have anything burning?
Huh?
Do you have like any burning answers that you want to add, or are you?
No, not really. Right.
There you go. And last is a question from Greg for everybody here: what remakes, reboots do you prefer to the original? That's a good question, because
outright prefer to the original?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Let's see: this Little Shop of Horrors, The Thing,
I like
Fly.
I like the American version of The Ring better than Ringu.
That's a good one on The Fly, because the one with what's his face, Jeff Goldblum, is, I can never rewatch that. It's disgusting. It makes me want to puke.
Ocean's 11 is significantly
better. That's true.
Better.
Ocean's 11, yeah, with Soderbergh.
This is kind of cheating, but The Wizard of Oz in 1939, it was actually like the third version, or maybe the second version of that film. There were two silent versions.
Same with Maltese Falcon. I mean,
yeah, which people no one really talks about. But it was a remake, so I mean, if I want to say better than the original, I would pick that. Yeah.
I prefer the 70s Body Snatchers to the 50s Body Snatchers.
Yeah, I do too.
Great score.
And there's Heat and Man on Fire, which remade like, they were lesser known versions of those movies, but they are remakes.
That's a lot of good answers.
I mean, there's a lot of movies. There's a lot of remakes I like, but liking straight up.
You know, I prefer Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much. His remake, I prefer that to the original.
Hmm. Okay.
James Stewart, Doris Day.
Yeah.
Jay Stu.
Jay Sarasra. Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. And that was feedback.
All right, let's move on now. Let's get to Abe. What a
Aaron, I think it might be time for some games here. That's actually the song that you hear when Denzel goes onto the screen for the first time in Magnificent Seven.
Of course, yes. That's, of course, the improv theme for games. Abe, you got a game for us this week?
I do. It's called Magnificent Remakes. And this is where I will inform you guys of a clue about one of the actors in The Magnificent Seven. And I'll give you the clue, and I'd like you to name the movie in which they remade. And you can buzz in by saying your name and then giving me the answer.
So there will be a clue to a movie featuring one of the stars of this movie, mm-hmm, where they starred in a remake of another movie.
Yeah, yeah. And if you can name the movie that they remade, that'd be great.
All right,
here we go.
I'm confused, but I'll try my best.
Don't worry. Yeah, just let it just float. Let it go with the flow. Denzel Washington starred in this political thriller remake in which brainwashing occurs.
Aaron. The Manchurian Candidate.
That's right. With Liev Schreiber. All right. While he wasn't the star of the movie, Chris Pratt had a role with Vince Vaughn, who starred in a remake of this French-Canadian film about a man who visits a sperm donation location many, 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 many times and soon wants to meet all of his children.
Mark.
Mark.
Delivery Man.
That's right.
I couldn't think of the title.
The original Canadian title, French Canadian title, was Starbuck. It's an alright movie. Next one here. Ethan Hawke starred in this remake of a John Carpenter classic about a police officer who takes in Aaron.
Assault on Precinct 13.
That's right. Next one here. Again, not a direct remake, but Manuel Garcia Ruffalo stars in this TV series based on a movie of the same name on the El Rey Network.
Mark.
Aaron.
Mark.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
That's right. Next one here. While he wasn't in any remakes, Vincent D'Onofrio did play Orson Welles in this movie that got Martin Landau an Oscar for supporting
Aaron.
Aaron.
Ed Wood.
That's right. Next one here.
That's really stretching it.
Next one here. Again, I'll give it a pass, but Martin Sennheiser will play a role in this HBO remake of the same name as the 1973 film written by Michael Crichton.
Mark. Westworld.
That's right. And here we go here. Technically, it's not a remake. It's more of a reimagining of events.
I love how every question is technically.
But being Byung-Hun Lee plays a cop who is sent back through time to stop Kyle Reese from meeting Sarah Connor.
Aaron. Terminator Genesis.
That's right.
The worst movie of last year.
I mean, come on. The worst movie of last year?
It was on my number one list of worst movies of last year.
It was pretty bad. Yeah, that reimagining thing really didn't help out. With that, that was all seven of the Magnificents. Mark, unfortunately, you came in one answer short. So, Aaron, you are the winner this week. But just for funsies, can you guys name the top grossing movie from Anton Fuqua?
Probably is
Domestic?
The Equalizer.
Domestic. Yeah. Okay, Mark, you said The Equalizer?
It's not King Arthur, I know that. I guess I'll say Training Day.
Okay. Training Day is third. It is The Equalizer. 101 million. Training Day
is Shooter the second?
Shooter is not the second. Olympus Has Fallen is second.
Oh, Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah, with 98 million. So there you go. Anton Fuqua, Equalizer, a movie disliked by a lot of people.
Training Day because it came out like in 2001.
Yeah, but you know, the whole Oscar buzz with Denzel might have boosted it up a bit.
Yeah, by the way, Training Day has been on TNT like every weekend for the past like 2 months. It's great.
Yeah, I think in its day, I think Training Day was a bigger hit.
There you go. So that was games.
You know what? You promised us a really hard game this week. Just saying.
That was hard. They weren't.
You read exact descriptions of what the movie is.
Some of these weren't actually movie remakes. They're TV remakes. Mark got some of those.
Well, my favorite part was it's a game about remakes, and then half the question started with, now technically not a remake.
It couldn't stick with the remake. Couldn't stick
it's
with the
actually a TV
the...
show.
I had to get the Magnificent Seven in the game somehow.
Was Peter Sarsgaard not in a remake?
I don't think so. Don't think so. I looked it up.
Wasn't Flight Plan a remake of good movies?
Was it really?
Just in general?
Flight Plan? With, was that the one with
that's the one with
Jodie
Foster
where her husband
disappears.
Is actually not dead? Spoiler.
There's a lot of weird. It's not a good movie.
Where her daughter wakes up, where she wakes up and her daughter's not there, and then they're like, you never had a daughter. You're the only
exactly.
person. That, yeah.
So like, your daughter's been dead
stupid.
For 3 years.
Yeah. Surprise!
All right. Let's move on. Now, let's get down now for what's on now. These are movies coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and we got a few here. First up, Warcraft.
It's not for me, but I certainly felt as though it was for a group of audience members.
It was huge like, in China.
Like any movie, it was meant for a certain audience member.
Yeah.
The Shallows.
Is that the one with the shark?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, it was fun.
Kinda like
Mark, did you see The Shallows?
I did see The Shallows. I liked it. I liked it fine. I thought it was good.
Next up, we have Central Intelligence.
I laughed.
I laughed every so often.
Mm.
But not enough. Let's see. Speaking of no laughs, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
Did not see it. Heard it was awful.
then go for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't even watch that on video.
Yeah. The Neon Demon.
You liked it, right, Eric?
I see that.
I thought it was okay. I know Peter Parris, friend of the show, it's like his favorite movie of the year. I think Scott kind of liked it.
Favorite movie of the year?
Favorite movie of the year. Wow, that's high praise.
He's put it pretty high up there so far. Did you see it, Mark? Did you say you're going to see it?
No, I have not seen it, but I've heard some things. I think it's visually interesting is what I've heard. It's kind of interesting. I actually would have seen it in the theater, but I didn't get around to it, and then it wasn't in theaters for long enough for me to check it out.
It falls into that divisive category where it's hard to get a read on the overall thoughts. It seems to go either way if you're impressed by the visuals and sound, because Nicholas Winding Refn is good at that kind of thing,
right?
Versus how well you appreciate the story.
I love Drive, so as you know.
But we didn't like Only God Forgives.
Only God Forgives. So. I mean, it had some interesting visuals, like we said, but yeah, not a whole lot of. I mean, it's a strange plot.
Next up, Cell. This was a Stephen King adaptation with John Cusack and Sam Jackson, which I think is like a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, really?
I think it's close to that. Let's see.
I mean, that's
it had a zero for a while. It might have gotten its share
not
of
very good. Unfortunately, would you say Sam Jackson?
You have not seen this, Aaron?
I didn't see it. No, it shot up to 8%. So there you go.
Will you see it?
No. I'm good with 14.
The reason why I ask is because you are a big John Cusack fan. I know
yes,
you,
I am.
Like,
yeah.
So it's possible that you would just say, "I'm going to see it because he's in it."
Yeah. Well, the recent years of Cusack have not been like amazing, so it's hard for me to like back him in the same way I back other directors or actors. But he is really good in Love and Mercy and Chirac. So you know those are out there. Let's see, next up, American Werewolf in London 35th Anniversary Edition.
Oh,
has
wow.
a new
it's
transfer and all
35
that
35 years?
So, yeah,
that movie used to scare me a lot as a kid. A lot of the practical makeup effects on his buddy, just I had a hard time watching that.
Let's see, Grimm Season 5. Grimm out there,
good on them for getting 5 seasons.
Shout Factory is releasing Bill and Ted's Most Excellent Collection, which is a new 3-disc edition featuring both movies and a whole extra disc full of bonus features with interviews and all that. So if you're a fan of the Bill and Ted movies, I am. I don't know if I'm going to get this set or not. Maybe if it's cheaper.
Have you heard that they're – I don't know the details, but I think they're remaking it.
No, they keep talking about Bill and Ted 3 every, 3 months or so when someone asks Alex Winter or Keanu Reeves a question about it, so it keeps getting in the news cycle that way. it's the same, like, anytime Winona Ryder's in the news, someone asks her about Beetlejuice 2, and we get reminded how it's never going to happen, but we'll
Tim
talk Burton about
has
it.
Has no interest in doing that. So.
No one has interest in doing that, but every time someone says the words Beetlejuice, it's like everyone on the news needs to write a story about it.
And then people create fan art that makes it look like it's actually happening, and then the pictures go through Facebook for a while saying, "Look, it's happening." It's like, no.
Some of those are better than others. Some of those look pretty decent, and some of them are just like, this is a terrible Photoshop.
So in conclusion, Bill and Ted 3, still not happening. on Criterion this week, we have Valley of the Dolls and Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. The latter being co-written by Roger Ebert. So there you go. As well as the Decalogue from Krzysztof Kieslowski comes out on Criterion Edition this week. That's like, it's like 10 films, right? That's handling different like commandments, I believe, right? I have not seen this, but I hear it's quite.
What's
quite
that movie with the Duplass brothers about, like, the dodecathlon? Is that what it is?
The dodecathlon. Yeah, that is nothing like the Decalogue.
No, I know. It just reminded me.
Out on Chopping Mall. I wanted to mention this just because Brandon Peters reviewed this on Why So Blue, but it's one of a number of like 80s horror movies that got just really great Blu-ray transfers and releases. And lastly, Highlander 30th Anniversary Edition.
There
can only be
it.
One. It can only be one, except when you print thousands of copies.
Yeah, I enjoyed that and the TV series.
Yeah. I've never cared about Highlander.
That
includes The Quickening, Highlander 2. All right. Let's move on now. Let's get to... Now let's get to Extremely Cool. These are movies that are coming out on Netflix that we can recommend. No new big movies, but I saw Easy is now on Netflix. This is a new Netflix series written and directed by Joe Swanberg, who gave us Drinking Buddies and a number of other, what's it called? Those improv movie type things. Regardless. I know what I'm trying to think of. I can't think of it right now. But that's on there. And then I just randomly searched and I saw The Fly with Vincent Price is actually on Netflix. So.
Vincent Price.
If you haven't seen The Fly before, that's one you can watch.
There you go.
Yeah. And, okay, so that was extremely cool. What's Mumblecore. That's the term I'm
trying
to think.
Okay. So, yeah. I was like, what is he talking about there? But I know what you mean now.
He's out there, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Duplass Brothers again.
Yeah, Duplass Brothers, big one. Yeah, all right, big proponents of Mumblecore.
Yeah, they have a new release coming out on Netflix, and I'm very interested in seeing it. It's with Mark Duplass and who's the woman who just won an Emmy for playing Marcia Clark?
Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson. Yeah. So they have like this black and white movie that's coming out in theaters and later to Netflix in October, and it's like this looks really good.
All right.
Actually, this is way off the subject, but I did not watch the Emmys, but I looked to see who won, and I noticed it said Best Supporting Actor for a Comedy Series, Louis Anderson, and I thought, the only Louis Anderson I can think of is that comedian, and sure enough, it's the same guy.
He's great at Baskets.
He's great, yeah, right. Baskets.
Aaron and I have talked about Baskets.
I wanted to get your opinion of the – I have not seen Baskets, and I wanted
to
know –
It's certainly like if you've seen like Galifianakis is you know his more like offbeat humor like his anti-comedy type stuff. It's more along the lines of that. Although I think it is pretty legit funny without being like you know shying away from how just general comedy works. But
I forgot how I described it when I first talked about it. But basically, it's hilariously depressing, and it is like Louis Anderson does do a very very good job in it. He plays the mother of
he plays
Galifianakis.
The Galifianakis who plays two, he plays twin brothers.
Right. One of them is a cheerleading coach and volleyball coach, and the other one is a rodeo clown.
An aspiring rodeo clown.
But I definitely recommend it.
The idea of Louis Anderson playing the mother of Zach Galifianakis, that's inspired. And I saw, like, I've seen, like, you know, pictures from it. I'm buying it. Like, I have not seen it, so I don't. I mean, he won an Emmy, so he obviously must. Somebody thinks he's good, so I'm really curious about this.
It's the kind of thing where the universe is so bizarre, but without calling too much attention to itself, where you just look and it's like, oh yeah, that works. Okay, yeah, you don't really think about it after.
Also, I mean, I forget who the woman is that's basically the insurance broker in the show, but she's also really good.
It's a good little ensemble, like between
her deadpan, and it's so honest to some degree too. So it's really, really. Well done. I mean, they're only like 22-minute episodes, so
it's the kind of thing where, like, after The Hangover and you see the sequels, it's like clearly Galifianakis has bigger aspirations than just playing this character, and this is clearly like this is what he wanted to do, like something like this, and he did it.
He's intrinsically funny. I saw him as on SNL, and his opening monologue is brilliant.
I'll have to check that one out.
I don't know. Maybe he's been on more than once, but I'm thinking of one time.
I think he's been on
twice.
Okay.
I'm thinking of one time that he was on, and I was dying. I thought he was really hilarious. He played the piano, and it was really funny.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's see. Next week's show. Next week we're going to talk about Tim Burton's new film, Miss Peregrine's School for Peculiar Children, because we really wanted to type out a lot of words in the next episode. So.
I mean, why not? We got to practice our Mavis Beacon teaches us typing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's next week. And let's see. Last thing we do here.
Do you have high hopes for that?
I've actually seen it, and I can't actually talk about it.
Oh, okay.
I'm optimistic, but I'm kind of holding myself neutral.
Tim Burton.
Yeah, we'll see.
I like Tim Burton. So. Last thing we do here. What should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? Mark Hoban, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Well, I mean, I mentioned this a little earlier, but I still like Hell or High Water. So if you can find that, I know it's still playing in some theaters. I would say go see that.
And what do you plan to see next?
I'm going to see Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Cool.
Abe?
Definitely go see Kubo and the Two Strings. If you can, just buy extra tickets and sit in an empty theater by yourself, but it definitely could use some of the cash. And next, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Chillin'.
What's the acronym for this movie? But I'll make
That one, yeah.
With a score by the Cernfurs, featuring Frank.
Like the Frank? The papier-mâché head Frank?
Yes.
Oh,
wow. The Cernfurs.
Oh, cool.
No, I'm kidding. It's not, it doesn't have music by them.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's not a real band.
I was like, that guy that was based on a real guy.
Yeah. If you can see Kubo or Hell or High Water, I'd say that. I'd really recommend Queen of Katwe, actually, if you can
see. Is that coming out?
It came out this weekend in 52 theaters. It expands next weekend to like 1,500.
Yeah.
So I really like that movie. I thought that was very good.
Cool.
Next I'm seeing Deepwater Horizon with Mark Wahlberg saving the oil or people. Either way.
I mean, he's gonna get a dinosaur fossil for his little girl. Show me those eyes.
100% guaranteed dinosaur tooth. And say hi to your mother.
That's being released the same day as Miss Peregrine's Home. Yes, and Masterminds also.
Masterminds.
Which also has Zach Galifianakis. That's a good cast, but I'm not a Jared Hess fan. Like, I don't like his movies.
What has he done in the past?
Napoleon Dynamite and Nacho Libre.
I wasn't huge on Nacho. I enjoyed Napoleon, although on rewatch, I'm just like,
you didn't like Napoleon Dynamite?
That's I'm not a Napoleon Dynamite fan, no.
Modern day classic.
It is very
offbeat. That's what some say.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
And actually, I liked Napoleon Dynamite is his best, but I liked Nacho Libre too, actually.
I like Nacho more than Napoleon Dynamite, but wasn't huge. I never saw his other one that had Sam Rockwell, which means I should have seen it, but I didn't see that one.
We both should have seen it.
As opposed to if you had John Cusack, like, I don't know. But if that's on Rockwell.
I mean, if he's got Sam Rockwell and John Goodman, it's like, we have to see it. It doesn't have John Goodman.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen American Honey, by the way? The Shia LaBeouf movie?
No.
Yeah, it looks a little bit not for me, but I'm just curious
if
you
guys have
seen
it. It's like 2 hours and 45 minutes, so it's like, I don't know, when am I going to see that?
Yeah, I'm just like, this looks a little bit too artsy for me.
Are you saying be
full enough.
No. I was just.
All right. Yeah. Well, good, because that's going to do it for this week's episode about Now, Third Ape. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeiszeke.com. All my reviews and whatnot are there. You can also find me writing daily over at Screen Rant and on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You find more fun stuff over at Aaron's blog, thecodeiszeke.com, or you can find him over writing over at Screen Rant. And you can find more fun stuff over at twitter.com/walrusmoose, hashtag Kenny Powers. Sure.
Mark Hoban.
You can find more of my writing on my personal blog, fastfilmreviews.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter, Mark_Hoban.
You can find all the other episodes of Out Now, Theron and Abe, over on iTunes, as well as on Audio Boom.
You can listen to us over on HHWLOD, SoundCloud, and Podomatic.
And feel free to email us your thoughts on The Magnificent Seven over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Or let us know your thoughts over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And, of course, there's our Tumblr page where you can send us plenty of gifs of Denzel making guarantees over at outnowpodcast.tumblr.com.
We got to figure out what to do with that page.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
We should compile all these clips of us saying what you can do at our Tumblr page and make it into its own episode and only post it on Tumblr. Mark Hoban, thank you for joining
us. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think it's been a while.
Yeah.
Been a while.
And we didn't get to have you. It's been a while. We didn't get to have you on for the summer gamble where you courageously fought and still did not win.
Right. I came in fourth, huh?
You came in fourth. Yeah, you're
not
top
bad.
Five.
Yeah.
You and Abe, you're in top five.
Top five. That's a good move, Chris Rock.
Until next time we talk about Memphis, that's going to do it for this episode. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye. Goodbye.
Oh, what about the Goonies?
Yeah, that's a ragtag group of people fighting, yeah, you know.
Why not?
Yeah.
Few sentences have ever began with 13 Assassins and ended with the Goonies.
Hey, how about the Goonies?